It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 136 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
And so today we're going to come to the conclusion of our first series of podcasts for X-Wing 2.0. Today we're going to finish our discussion talking about build-around mechanics.
Yeah, and you all know what ship we're going to start with when we talk about the Empire. We've talked about her in every build-around episode so far. So let's get right to it.
So the main example we've used in our previous episodes about build-around mechanics for what we mean when we use that phrase build-around mechanic has been HAL Runner, and now we are finally talking about the Galactic Empire, so we can talk about HAL Runner once again.
Yeah, HAL Runner, the textbook build-around mechanic, has the pilot ability. While a friendly ship at range 0 to 1 performs a primary attack, that ship may reroll one attack die.
And we've already gone over this example several times talking in the other podcasts here, but this is just a great example of when we say build-around mechanic, what we're talking about is usually a pilot ability or sometimes an upgrade ability that may or may not work on its own, but you really see value in it when you combine it with other ships in your list and you kind of design your list with the intention of trying to get the most effect out of whatever that build-around mechanic is. So in the case of HAL Runner, yes, HAL Runner can use this ability on herself and reroll an attack die when she attacks, but that's not great value. She's an expensive TIE fighter, 40 points currently, so just getting one offensive reroll doesn't really justify the 40-point expense.
Absolutely not. But once you start putting some friendly ships next to HAL Runner and they're getting rerolls on their primary attacks, you start to get some payoff. And, you know, when you have four, five, six other ships around HAL Runner all benefiting from her ability, well, now 40 points seems like a steal for all the value you're getting.
And since we're actually talking about the Empire this time, we can dive a little bit deeper into what makes HAL Runner so great. One thing I do want to point out is right away, we normally see, when we see HAL Runner, it's almost always in a swarm with TIE fighters, which is interesting because, I mean, any ship in the game that uses its primary weapon could benefit from an offensive reroll to its primary weapon. But almost always when you're seeing HAL Runner, you're seeing HAL Runner paired up with other TIE fighters.
Right. And, you know, I do think there's a reason for that. Part of it is the action selection that the TIE fighter has, and also its attack dice pool. So to get the most from the HAL Runner mechanic, you're not going to want ships that are taking target locks, because they're already going to have access to rerolls. So you want a ship that doesn't really have access to target lock, or doesn't have the action efficiency to get focus and target lock. Because what HAL Runner really is providing these two attack dice ships is the ability to have, you know, focus and target lock for their attacks. You know, when you have just two attack dice, rerolling one is often very comparable to having a target lock.
Right, and when a build-around mechanic grants other ships abilities that they wouldn't normally have access to, in this case, TIE fighters being able to reroll attack dice, that's getting you even more value out of that build-around mechanic. There's another reason, though, I think you do see TIE fighters paired most frequently with HAL Runner as opposed to other ships, is that TIE fighters lend themselves to swarm flying, which is keeping your ships in close proximity to each other, which, since HAL Runner does have a pretty stringent range restriction of 0 to 1, if you want to get multiple uses out of HAL Runner's ability, you're going to have to keep your ships really close. So even though pretty much any ship can benefit from rerolling offensively, a lot of ships that do want to reroll offensively don't want to fly around in swarms. You're not going to see Whisper flying so much in swarms. You're not going to be seeing the Inquisitor or Darth Vader generally flying with their swarm.
Right. Well, and, you know, TIE fighters are cheap, and that's a big part of it. We want to get as many ships around HAL Runner to maximize the effect of her ability. But the Empire does have a few other cheap alternatives. You know, you have your generic TIE interceptors, your TIE strikers. But, you know, you said it, these ships don't play as well in swarms. You know, TIE strikers with those ailerons are kind of really difficult to manage. If you're trying to fly them in a clump, they want to be more spread out and attack from all angles. And the TIE interceptor is similar there, where, you know, you're paying points for that auto thrusters linked action. And so if you're not boosting around and barrel rolling, you're not really getting the full value of your interceptor. Yes, you do have three attack dice, which, you know, is a big improvement over the TIE fighters. But, you know, when you're looking at a HAL Runner swarm, that bump up for three attack dice for the striker or the TIE interceptor you're not always getting the full value there, because with three attack dice, you might more often need to reroll more than one attack die.
And there will be cases, even if you're flying a ship like an interceptor, where even if you're not flying in a swarm, every once in a while you'll be within range of Power Runner to get that reroll. But part of what you're looking at with these build around mechanics is trying to get the most value out of them, where if you're only triggering Power Runner's ability on your ship once or twice per game, you're probably not getting the best value out of that ability. I do think we can segue, though, into talking about a ship with a similar ability to Howl Runner, but it's executed a little bit differently, and it's used at a little bit different frequency. So the bomber Captain Jonas has the ability, while a friendly ship at range 0 to 1 performs a torpedo or missile attack, that ship may reroll up to 2 attack dice.
Yeah, and this is a pretty interesting difference here, where, you know, Howl Runner just rerolling 1 attack dice works really well when you have a lot of small dice pool attacks. You know, Captain Jonas, you know, when you're firing munitions, you're not rolling 2 dice, you're rolling 3 or 4 or even 5 attack dice. So you're going to need a little bit more reroll action. But rerolling 2 dice is pretty good. That's a big step up. And it's going to matter a lot when you're rolling those 4 dice proton torpedo attacks.
And the important difference to note is, even while both Howl Runner and Captain Jonas have the same requirements for triggering their rerolls, Captain Jonas does grant additional rerolls because the frequency that you're using Captain Jonas is going to be a little more narrow, just because it's limited to only munition attacks. So that means that the ability can be more powerful, but it does mean it's probably going to be used a little bit less. But Captain Jonas, though, does complement an entirely different group of ships than Howl Runner, whereas Howl Runner is typically going to be flying with a swarm of your more inexpensive ships. Captain Jonas tends to go towards inexpensive ships that are also carrying munitions, like other TIE bombers.
Right. I mean, so the goal here is to have, you know, focused attacks and then a pseudo target lock ability that Captain Jonas is providing on as many torpedo ships or missile ships as you can fit. And, you know, you are able to get a more powerful reroll ability in here, because at that point when you are investing in munitions, well, you're not going to be able to fit as many ships in your squad as you could with Howl Runner.
Now, I think one of the first questions you come to with Captain Jonas is, if you're running this with ships that have munitions, most often munitions require you to already have a target lock on the defender. So you're getting rerolls even though you already have a target lock that you could use to spend on your offense. Now, the reason you probably want to take Captain Jonas is because oftentimes munitions do come with multiple charges for their attacks. So if Captain Jonas is next to a ship you have with, say, a proton torpedo, you're going to be able to fire that proton torpedo and get rerolls without having to spend your target lock. That means that the following turn, you still have that target lock if you want to let loose another volley of proton torpedoes, this time possibly modified with a focus since you didn't need to take a fresh target lock.
That is a pretty good point. Getting to keep your target lock so you're set up for ammunition the following turn is also very good. You know, if you're not able to finish off your target, especially if it's a big target like Boba Fett or a Lambda that you're maybe not able to finish off with one solid torpedo volley, well, you're definitely ready the next turn with Captain Jonas. I also really like Jonas for, you know, some other TIE bombers with barrage rockets where you just need that focus token to fire them. Yeah, you're not rolling as big of a dice pool, but, you know, not needing that target lock means you're low initiative TIE bombers have a chance against, you know, those squirrely aces like Supernatural Darth Vader. You know, if he lands in your arc, you're ready with now focus and 2 rerolls provided from Captain Jonas, which I think really puts some pressure on the aces, which is needed.
So one interesting build around mechanic that we see in Imperials that we don't see anything similar in Scum and Villainy or in the Rebel Alliance is Inferno Squadron. And this is a build around mechanic that stands apart from all the other ones we've discussed or going to discuss here, because this is really more of a set of ships built around a mechanic that's not exemplified in any one particular ship, but spread out across all of them.
Right. So there are 2 members of Inferno Squadron who have a build around mechanic off of the same trigger. And then, of course, you have your 4th member of Inferno Squadron who is going to provide the condition for that trigger. And, of course, you have Iden Versio, who doesn't care at all about the mechanic, just cares about keeping her squad alive.
But looking at these ships, the 3 ships we're talking about, Del Mico, Gideon Hask, and Sane Marana, all focus around a theme of getting damage onto the defender. So a damaged defender in X-Wing 2nd Edition means a ship with a damage card on it. And we see that theme come up in the pilot abilities of all 3 of these ships.
Right. So we have Del Mico, who is probably the most build around y of the Inferno Squadron with the ability. While a friendly ship at range 0 to 2 defends against a damaged attacker, the defender may reroll one defense die. So this is a very good, you know, payoff ability. Rerolling defense dice. Defensive modification is, of course, at quite a premium in second edition. It was pretty good in first edition, and it's even rarer now. So this is definitely a path worth exploring.
And even outside of Inferno Squadron, Del Mico has a pretty great support ability that supports lots of other ships. Obviously, Del Mico can use this ability on its own, or can spread it to any other, even non-Inferno Squadron ships. What makes this part of a build-around mechanic here is it's all centered on the theme of putting damage on the opposing ships. And Del Mico's ability has a very wide range of effect, 0 to 2, so that's a pretty big range for an ability this strong. Like you said, the defensive reroll is huge because there's not a lot of defensive modification in 2nd edition. So anything you can get is great, especially for ships like other TIE Fighters, which typically only have one defensive token, Focus or Evade, maybe.
Right, and you know, TIE Fighters, you know, when you give them just one reroll on that green die, that is a pretty big boost to their defensive capabilities. You know, a TIE Fighter with three green dice, a focus, and a reroll, it's going to be pretty hard to finish those guys off.
So we see Del Mico working off of this damaged opponent theme, but Gideon Hask actually takes kind of the opposite angle there, using the same triggering effect. So Gideon Hask's ability, while you perform an attack against a damaged defender, roll one additional attack die. And this is an ability that could work as a standalone if you had Gideon in a list. You know, you just get Gideon to start shooting at a ship that's damaged. But the way you're going to get the best value out of this is if you design your list so that you get damage cards out as quickly as possible so that Gideon gets as many attacks as possible with that extra attack die.
Right. I mean, and that's a big boost in your damage capabilities. Going from two attack dice to three attack dice is quite a boon.
Yeah, I mean, the standard TIE Fighter's only got two attack dice, and the jump from two to three attack dice in X-Wing in general is a pretty big leap. And when you're able to trigger this ability, especially triggering it early on, getting a 30-point TIE Fighter to roll three attack dice, where the next comparable Imperial ship with three native attack dice is coming in right now at, like, 34 points, that's a really good value.
Right. I mean, you're getting an initiative 4 three attack dice ship, so that's pretty great.
But it's all dependent on making sure you can get that damage onto the opposing ships as early as possible. And that's where this third ship comes into play, Sane Marana.
Sane, who has the marksmanship card stapled to him.
Sane's ability is, while you perform an attack, you may spend one critical result. If you do, deal one face-down damage card to the defender, then cancel your remaining results. So, of course, the reason you're going to want to staple that marksmanship upgrade card, which of course allows you, while an enemy ship's in your bullseye, you can change one of your hit results to a crit result, is that it's going to enable you to more reliably roll those crit results so you can deal that face-down damage card to the defender.
Right. I mean, and so for most small base ships, you know, having Iden and Sane attack, you're going to get maybe a damage card through, and so then you can start turning on Gideon and Del Mico. But, you know, with some larger ships, that's where you're going to struggle get through their shields. The medium and large base ships who have a bit more shields before you can start getting into the hull and counting them as damaged. And actually, those are going to be the ships that's going to be a lot easier to line up your bullseye arc on. So that works pretty nicely with Sane.
Yeah, this whole Inferno Squadron strategy is based on the idea of getting those defenders damaged, getting a face-down damage card, or face-up damage card for that matter, onto the opposing ships. And Sane Marana enables you to do that very early on, oftentimes in the first round of engagement. And like you're saying, Carson, if those ships are large base, even if they have a lot of shields, it's not too hard to get them into that bullseye firing arc, get a hit result change to a crit, and then just deal that face-down damage. And I mean, I love Sane Marana anyway because it's a great closing ship to have. Because if you happen to just line up or even just roll natural crits, it's also a great late game ship that can just deal damage and basically ignore defense dice.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is a really fun squad to include in your list because it does involve a lot of moving parts. You know, you have this little mini game of just damaging your opponents, and then suddenly all of your TIE Fighters turn into way better versions of TIE Fighters. They go Super Saiyan.
And I really have enjoyed Inferno Squadron in X-Wing 2nd Edition just because it's a good example of what you'd call a cycle in game design, where it's a set theme that several different cards are designed around. We see this in a lot of other games. But it's really cool to start seeing that showing up in X-Wing. And I'm actually looking really forward to, as new ships come out, new pilots come out, to see more abilities that are designed like this, where they're meant to be used in tandem, even though they can still be used individually.
Yeah, I was kind of disappointed after seeing this that the X-Wing pilot abilities didn't have a similar amount of synergy with each other. But, you know, there's still four more factions on the road, so anything's possible.
So one ship that's seen some pretty dramatic improvements moving from first edition into second edition is the Lambda class shuttle. And one of the best parts about the Lambda class now is not only does it have that rear gun, you also have a whole new slew of pilot abilities that really make you want to put these Lambdas into your list.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot to like with the Lambda, and a lot of players have been gravitating toward this build around mechanic and really getting quite a bit of value out of it. Colonel Jenden, I think, might be the most popular build-around mechanic in second edition right now across all three factions.
Well, and that wouldn't be surprising just based on how strong this pilot ability is. Colonel Jenden's pilot ability, at the start of the activation phase, you may spend one charge. If you do, while friendly ships acquire locks this round, they must acquire locks beyond range 3 instead of at range 0 to 3. And Jenden starts with two charge counters that cannot be regenerated.
Which is a lot of text to process, or you can just think of them as Oprah, but for target locks.
You get a target lock, and you get a target lock. There's a couple things that make this really great. First of all, proton torpedoes are really strong in second edition right now. It's a really great value, and being able to set up a whole slew of proton torpedoes is a really powerful combination, which you can do with a whole set of those very inexpensive TIE bombers.
Right. I mean, four attack dice, you know, getting a crit is great. And, you know, especially when you're putting them on TIE bombers, going from two attack dice to four attack dice, those proton torpedoes are a huge value. But you have a big hurdle of having to get that target lock on your low initiative bombers for that opening salvo.
Yeah, typically the problem you'll see with those low initiative ships is that they're going to need to move into range where they can get a target lock, but they're going to be activating first, so they're going to move first. So typically by the time you've entered range to get that initial target lock, you've possibly put yourself in a position where your opponent can just zoom right in and clear that range 2 to 3 limitation of the proton torpedoes so you can actually fire them off. Colonel Jenden gets around that, though, where basically on turn one, you can spend one of those charges, let all of your other friendly ships, the TIE bombers with protons, get a bunch of target locks, maybe on the same ship, maybe split them up to divide the threat. Either way, you're putting a threat out right away so that when you reach that initial engagement, you can actually just take a focus action and get a whole bunch of fully modified proton torpedo shots with both focus and target lock.
Absolutely. I mean, Colonel Jenden uses his first charge to really set up that opening strike. Either you pick a target and everybody locks on that important ship, or you diversify so that any ship approaching is going to have to face, you know, at least one or two proton torpedoes if it comes into range of your TIE bomber squad. And then, you know, when it comes into the late game, or if you have to adjust for, you know, your opponent changing their ships and how they approach you, well, then you have that second charge to reacquire those target locks and just make sure you continue to keep up that devastating firepower.
Yeah, I mean, if you're interested in trying the list out, you can rock out a Colonel Jenden with the ST-321 title and then four Scimitar Squadron TIE bombers, each with proton torpedoes. Currently comes in at about 200 points, so before we see any point changes, this is going to be a pretty powerful list that I think a lot of people are going to have to learn to overcome.
Yeah, I mean, what's nice about this list is I think Jenden's pilot ability is very good, especially for the points that you pay for it, and those TIE bombers are very good proton torpedo carriers, especially for the points that you're paying for them, and so those kind of compound where you're getting discounts on both ends to make a very powerful list. Not to say that it's not surmountable, you know, good repositioning can beat this list, but it's tough, and Jenden makes it a lot harder to arc dodge this list because they have those target locks. So anytime you just skirt into range 3, there's a devastating attack coming at your ship.
Okay, so the last ship ability we're going to talk about that's a build-around mechanic is the TIE Defender Colonel Vessery. And this one doesn't obviously seem immediately like a build-around mechanic, but you'll see as we talk about it that you actually do necessitate other ships in order to get the most effect out of this ability.
Colonel Vessery has the ability, while you perform an attack against a locked ship, after you roll attack dice, you may acquire a lock on the defender.
So while we see the actual end effect of this ability is really focused on Colonel Vessery being able to have a really powerful attack and get some good action modification onto his attack rolls, in order to trigger that ability, you have to have other ships that are out there already taking target locks and getting those enemy ships locked so that you can trigger Colonel Vessery's ability when it comes time for him to fire.
Right, and actually when you look at the Empire, you know, ships that can take target locks is not a trivial ask for your other squad mates for Vessery. There's a lot of ships that don't have access to the target lock action on their action bar. But I would say that the ones that do are actually all pretty good candidates here. You know, you have TIE Advanced or TIE Defenders are ones that come to mind. Of course, the TIE Bombers that we mentioned before, you know, they love their target locks, but they do also want to spend them. So that's where, like, the TIE Advanced and TIE Defenders, you know, especially if they're using fire control system, where they want to get that lock, but don't mind holding on to it. That means whenever Vessery targets an opposing ship, it's often going to be locked. And so you can really get the full value here.
And one of the things we always want to emphasize when we're talking about these build-around mechanics is that you really do want to get the most uses out of them that you can. That's when you're going to see the real value. So using ships that can not only take target locks, but it can also use fire control system so that they can get rerolls from their target locks, but not have to spend their target locks. That's going to benefit Vessery the most. And that means you're going to have the most opportunities to use Vessery's ability when he attacks. I mean, honestly, if I'm running a list with Vessery, I'm planning on using that Vessery ability every round. So that means I need the ships I'm shooting at to be target locked pretty much all the time. But the payoff is really potent because in X-Wing, right now it's really hard to get both a focus token and a target lock in a single turn. And Vessery's ability to do that puts him at the top list there for some of the most threatening ships in the game.
Yeah, now if only there were a ship to pair with Vessery that could have more than one target lock going at a time. That would be pretty cool.
I don't know. I think that would be crossing a red line.
You think that'd be too punishing?
That joke is punishing. All right. So we've reached the end of our series so far. I don't want to say the absolute end because we still have four more factions yet to be released for the game. But for the time being, we've covered the three main factions and all the content from that initial conversion kit.
All right, Tim. So at this point, I've dragged you through three episodes talking about build around mechanics. Do you know why it's worthwhile to look into these mechanics and study them?
I don't know, Carson. You pretty much told me this is what we were going to talk about, so I was just kind of going along with what you were saying.
And that's fine.
No, I think these are important points for a lot of reasons. It's not just so much that even the individual examples that we're giving are always going to be relevant examples, but I think this does give you a good baseline into... For me, it's the way you value mechanics and the way you value card interactions. So you can't take everything as isolated examples. You need to be able to look at things in combination and decide, wow, does the value I get from them collectively exceed the value I get from them individually? And then try to find, when you're list building, those combinations that get you the most value when they're put in a group. Even if that means it's going to be, you know, different than what it looks like just at face value when you're looking at the cards on their own.
Right. I think going through this process provides you another tool for list building for evaluating cards. And, you know, especially when you're trying to solve a meta that, you know, that has known threats and try and come up with creative ways to address them. You know, approaching list building from different angles really does help me come up with solutions. And so, you know, build around mechanics are just one of those tools. And hopefully over our course of studying second edition here on Radio TCX, that we'll be able to come up with other list building tools for you to utilize. So I do think it provides a valuable asset for list building and coming up with creative solutions. I also think it's pretty great when, you know, you're going to a big event, you're not really sure what lists you're going to come up against, especially right now, it feels like still a pretty open meta, a lot of different threats you could come across. Being able to quickly identify key pillars in your opponent's list, you know, if you see they're using some build around mechanics, well, those could be some weak stress points in their list that, you know, if you take out that pillar, the rest of it's going to fall away.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. I think this isn't even just something that's limited to kind of the turn zero, what you do before the game actually starts. I think this is very much when you get to the table, you want to be able to train yourself that you identify what card combinations are powerful. So you know, okay, what do I need to target first? What do I need to remove from my opponent's list so I can actually hurt their efficiency and take the advantage and win the game?
Absolutely. I mean, so a lot of value here. And I personally think it's a pretty fun process, picking a topic in X-Wing and just really diving deep into it. It's a rich game that, just keeps rewarding you the more intellectual time you put into it.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go into facebook.com/Radio TCX and like our Facebook page.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast.
And if you really enjoy the show, please go onto iTunes and leave us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the show and why others would be interested in listening.
And if you want to support the show directly, please consider going onto patreon.com/radiotcx and becoming a supporter of the show today. It really means so much to us. And thank you to everyone who's already become a supporter on Patreon.
Hopefully you guys learned a lot from this episode and you found it a valuable use of your time. We really appreciate you guys supporting the podcast and listening to our podcast every week. Congratulations, of course, to Thomas Forstner, who's the 2018 Coruscant Invitational Champion, the inaugural one here for second edition. So congratulations to him for taking that whole event.
Yeah, big congratulations. And of course, very cool to see Redline on the table and doing very well, winning the whole thing.
Thank you guys so much for listening. We'll talk to you next week.